I love going to the movie theater. Once I'm in the movie theater, all that drama to get there and order the tickets and get past the arcade and all the noise and everything. But once I'm in my reserved seat, I love that part of it. And it's one of those, Barker Lounger kind of things. It's great. It's really great. And it's a kind of a simple pleasure. And I'm glad I get a senior discount now too. So you have the popcorn, you have the comfy chairs, and above all, this time of year, you have the icy AC, which is very important. And I must admit that I don't always select a movie based on whether or not it's gonna, shift my paradigm or educate me or move me to another plane. And I rarely go to subtitled movies. They're just kind of hard. They're just kind of hard to watch. But I have a special movie, and I may have talked about it before, so pretend you haven't heard it before, if you have. One of my favorite movies is Babette's Feast. If you haven't seen it, I'm sure you can get it somewhere, stream it somewhere. And do you know something? It's subtitled. Oh my gosh. But I really, really love it. And you probably have a favorite movie too that you like watching over and over. You probably have a discussion every Christmas as to whether or not Die Hard 1 is a Christmas movie or not. It is a Christmas movie. And you probably have dialogue from movies that you quote. We do in our family. And the thing about our favorite movies, I think, is every time we watch them, we see different things. We hear different lines. And I first saw Babette's Feast. This is really funny. I first saw it in my introduction to theology class at seminary. And you're all probably going, what? Yeah, I thought my professor, who was a visiting professor, being looked at as to whether or not to be invited to be on the faculty. I thought it was a way for him to avoid lecturing when he announced that we were going to watch a film, the entire film. Or maybe he hadn't read the course material for the day, like a lot of us. But I found out that this quiet young man was actually very wise. Babette's Feast, Jutland, Denmark. It's the later part of the 19th century. There's two elderly maiden sisters, Martine and Philippa, and they're daughters of a long-deceased founder of a very austere Christian denomination and group there in Denmark. Always in gray, always in black, very somber, no enthusiasms, just very, very dark, like the weather in this part of the country. And they all maintained a simple life of piety and charitable works. And the two sisters carry on their father's memory by presiding over this small and ever-shrinking band of remaining disciples of their father's church. Now, as young women, these two gals were absolutely beautiful, not only on the outside, but on the inside as well. Very, very, very talented. But their father did not value their beauty on the outside. He valued the beauty that God gave them on the inside and had them maintain a very austere and dark religious vision. And they never married. But they did have beaux. Both of them had men that wanted them to go with them out into the world. One of the men, Lorenz, was a young officer. in the military, and he had been exiled to Jutland because they don't tell us what it was, but he had done, I quote, unbecoming behavior, end quote, and his parents had sent him to Jutland to, you know, get his act together. That, you know, maybe that was like sending our youth to Hobbs to get their act together in Hobbs, because there's nothing else to do there, right? And he was captivated by the sister called Martine. She was beautiful. She was just beautiful. And she was very caring and kind. And he wanted to take her away from it all. The other sister, Philippa, was courted by Pepin, who was a famous opera singer. And he found himself on the island in search of rest. And fortunately, the solitude plunged him into a darkness, a bleak mood. And he was only brought out of that bleak mood by the gorgeous, angelic, melodious voice of Philippa. She had the most gorgeous voice. And he wanted to take her away to the big cities to sing with him. And she didn't go. And years later, decades later, these two sisters are very content taking care of the ever-dwindling disciples and engaging in, again, charitable works, taking care of the village. And they had a maid that helped them do all this, and her name was Babette. And one stormy night, almost two decades before the event I'm going to talk about takes place, she arrived at their doorstep. She was a refugee from the terrors of the French Civil War, and her husband and her son had been killed in that war. Her only possession was a letter of introduction from the opera singer, Pepin, who implored the sister to give Babette refuge. And they did. And she took care of them for almost 15 years. She did the work of a domestic servant, and she prepared the very simple and very strange to us meal of split cod that would be aged outside. So it was like the texture of jerky, and ale bread, and that was the villagers' diet. So the religious group, by the time of our story, has really lost their verve and vigor. The few remaining members, just a handful, they're very advanced in years, and they have fallen into the habit of quarreling, kibitzing and sniping at each other, and all these old disagreements, something that happened 30 years ago, is reawakened. And so it kind of has a dark cloud, like that cloud that's over, what's the line of the Snoopy character that has Charlie Brown? Yeah, is that Pigpen? No, who is that?
Will Abner.
No, in Charlie Brown that has the cloud over him. What? Pigpen.
Yes.
So there's a cloud over the whole congregation. And they're just very down. And so, hoping to heal some of this disquietude, the sisters want to plan a celebration in honor of their father. It would have been his 100th birthday. So as the date approaches, Babette receives word that she has won 10,000 francs in the French lottery. I guess she bought her ticket somehow from France. They don't ever tell us how she did that. Maybe she did it online. I'm not really sure. But she's wondering what she's going to do with these 10,000 francs. And she asks the sisters, please let me prepare the meal for this wonderful celebration of our founder's 100th birthday. And they sort of reluctantly agree. You know, after all, Babette is French, and you never know what the French are going to do, the sisters think. And so Babette proceeds to order, I guess again online, the supplies from Paris. All this food begins to be delivered to this really austere, little humble abode. Stuff that the sisters have never seen or heard of. And they just hope that the dinner will be focused on things of a more moral, ethical, and religious and higher ground, and that the food is not going to detract from that. So they have this celebration, and guess who shows up? The soldier, Lorenz. He shows up. And by now, he is a general. He is a general. He's visiting his aunt there. And so he comes for dinner. He doesn't recognize the sister that he was so desperately in love with. And all the other guests arrive. They're very somber. They're in their black, a little bit of white, those big ruffly collars, you know. And they sit down and they're very, very somber. And it's such a contrast to the sumptuous meal that Babette has laid before them. Now, the general, as sometimes military people are wont to do, is oblivious to what the tone of the meal should be. And he is just gorging himself on this wonderful feast and encouraging everyone to consume the beautiful wine and the beautiful food and experience the sensual elements of this feast. And then he goes on and he talks about this famous Parisian chef, a woman, who in the years before the Civil War was known all over the country for her culinary artistry. She wasn't a cook. She wasn't just a chef. She was an artist. And surely, the general remarks, these delicacies that are placed before us, he says, are the very ones that he had savored at her fabled restaurant. So gradually, everybody's warmed by the fire and by the wine and the rich table fare. And the guests, too, begin to respond. We've all been at events like that, haven't we? Where we're like, do we have to go? We have to. And so you go and you sit down, maybe with people you know, maybe with people you don't know. And before you know it, it's like, oh my goodness, we've been sitting here for 2 hours talking away or listening or talking about the food or our kids or what we're going to do the rest of the summer, right? And all these old festering wounds that the small little congregation had, they were gone. They were healed. Everything had been forgiven. And so the general gets up and he acknowledges with such brilliance the reality of a world illuminated by love. Just like that dining room. That room is lit by each person in the love that they bring to that room. And when he departs, after finally recognizing the love of his life, Martine, he says that his love for her and his friendship with her served him so well and all those intervening years that they were separated. And he said that he learned something from that feast, that with God, all things are possible. So the dinner comes to a close, and the disciples leave, and illuminated by the moon. And it looks like it's a black and white film, but it's in color. But it's so gray there. And all the buildings are the same. And they stand in between the rows of houses that have no color. and they hold hands and they sing a hymn and they dance. And then they depart quietly. Inside the house after that, the sisters and Babette, they're just glowing. They don't care about the dishes. They don't care about, you know, packing leftovers and taking them down to the homeless shelter. But they will do that. And they tell her, or ask her, I guess, are you that famous chef from Paris? And she says, yes, I'm the famous chef from Paris. And she said she won't be returning to France. She spent all her lottery winnings, all 10,000 francs, on this feast. Could be her life savings. And she spent it all on this feast. And when the sisters are just like, oh, Babette explains that she has never given everything, not simply for them, but because within each artist's soul is a cry, a want, a desire to be given the chance to be the best they can be. And that was her best. And she did it for the sisters and those small little group of disciples and for the 100th anniversary of the founder's birthday. I think most of us in the seminary class were in tears. I know I was. How beautiful. How beautiful. And so after the lights came back up and everything was turned off, my seminary professor cracked open his Bible and read today's gospel lesson, the fishes and loaves. 10,000 people or so were following Christ. Can you imagine 10,000 people? Why? This guy was so compassionate. He listened, he heard them, he spoke to them. Even though there were 10,000 of them, it was like he was speaking to each one of them individually, that he knew their heart and their mind. And they're on a hillside, and Jesus has compassion for them again, and he heals them. But it gets towards evening, towards dark, and I can just see Simon Peter look at his Apple Watch and go, we got to go. We got to go. It's really great that you're helping these people, Jesus, but it's after 5. We're off the clock. You need to send them on their way. How many times do the greatest things in our lives come when we're off the clock? And Christ surprised them, as he has always wont to do. He said, they don't need to leave. You can feed them. What have you got? You've been there, right? Oh my gosh, the kids show up with their friends and the friends of their friends. Kids you've never seen. Youth you've never seen. And you got to feed them. Because we feed people, don't we? We feed people. And the disciples say, you know, we've taken attendance. Because at heart, we're good Presbyterians and Lutherans. So we're going to take attendance. And there are too many people here. And we only have 5 lousy pieces of bread and 2 fish. What good is that going to do us? And so you know the story. Jesus takes the loaves and the fishes. He blesses. He breaks. He gives it to the disciples to give to the congregation. It's not enough. Because it's more than enough. Christ doesn't give us enough. Christ gives us more than enough. And so these crackers and fish sticks, they become Babette's feast. They become Thanksgiving at Plymouth Rock. They become Christmas at Tiny Tim's. They become a tomahawk steak at Cowboy Prime. All you can eat at Ruth's Chris. The Feast of Ramadan, a Moravian love feast, a Hawaiian luau, and homemade Fredericksburg peach ice cream. This story is more than a story of free fast food. Even the people who aren't there and the people who are there, they're not sure what happened. Are we sure what happened? You know, every once in a while we'll have a church picnic or we'll have an event like Food and Fellowship. And we do our best at planning how much food to have. And sometimes we run out of bread. And you know what's coming next. And people go, oh, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? And then someone who's really not as funny as she thinks she is says, oh, the pastor's here. Give her a couple of loaves and let her take it from there. You know, sometimes that's about all we do with this story. We see it as magic, a trick. Or we try to come to a rational explanation. Will everybody share whatever food they had with them there that day? Right? Yeah. And that makes the point of the story, the importance of sharing. But this story isn't about magic or a sweet little lesson. It's the story of the Good Samaritan, the prodigal son, the water into wine, the woman at the well, Mary and Martha, and the raising of Lazarus, all rolled into one gospel. Did you know that this story about Jesus feeding the crowd is one of less than a handful of stories that is recorded in all four gospels? All four gospels. It was very important that we know this story, that we live this story, that we experience this story, that the church told and retold this story. For this is a miracle that happened once in a lonely place. And it became a story that happens again and again in a million places. In John's version, Christ says, I am the bread of life. The one who comes to me will not hunger. And notice the words Matthew uses. He said, Jesus took the loaves, blessed, broke, gave to the disciples. So those verbs, take, bless, break, and give, are the same ones in the same order as the Last Supper. This is communion, the Eucharist. Christ offers us more than simply food. He invites us to the Lord's table. And though most of us look pretty well fed, every one of us has a hunger, a sense that something is missing. And sometimes we don't have the words to describe it, but we try to fill that hunger with stuff and things and experiences. Most of us know the feeling of a midlife crisis. It shows up early and stays late. It's like standing in front of the refrigerator, which Mama never let us do. She said, close that refrigerator door. You're letting all the cold air out. But you stand in front of the refrigerator, right? Knowing you want something, but you're not sure what it is. We're kind of like Jacob wrestling with a stranger whose name we don't know. We feel empty even when we have everything we thought we needed. We are at the deepest level of our being longing for more. And I think this desire never completely goes away. And that's a gift of God. Is it faith we're hungry for? Is it hope? Is it love? Is it a sense of belonging? Is it God that we want? What is it we're longing for? I think at the heart of it, we come to church because we've heard a rumor about God. God is a God who feeds the hungry and nourishes the soul. We're longing for that for which we long. And our hunger leads us to this table, the promise of home and the heavenly banquet. We're not going to have 10,000 people. We're not going to have 5,000 people. We're not going to have 100 people. That's not why we're here, to count people. But all around the world, hungry people like you and me, we share this gift from God. And in this bread and cup, God gives strength because we get discouraged. God gives grace because we don't always feel accepted. God gives generosity because sometimes we get used to thinking only of ourselves. And God gives love because we so desperately want to be loved. We will be hungry even after this meal, but we'll have tasted the goodness of a day when there will be no more longing. At this table, God takes our hunger and blesses it and gives us hope. Thanks be to God. Amen.